From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory. Welcome to Charlotte Talks. Sitting in for Mike Collins, I'm Chris Clackham. Like I said earlier, an historic day has already begun in Rome with cardinals of the Catholic Church beginning the process for selecting the new pope. We have a panel that includes a Roman Catholic priest, theology professors from both Belmont Abbey College and Winthrop University to help us understand just how historic all of this is. We'll introduce them in just a moment, but first of all, let's go live to Rome. And to joining us by phone is George Weigel. George is the author of the book Evangelical Catholicism, Deep Reform in the 21st Century Church. He's a distinguished senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. He's a Catholic theologian in Rome in the role now as an on-air consultant commentator for NBC News. George, thanks for joining us. What's happening or has happened so far today?
Well, Chris, the cardinals have had one meeting in what are called general congregations. Beginning at 9:30 this morning, they're going to reconvene later this afternoon. There was some hope that we would get, at the end of that second session, a date for the opening of the conclave. That might happen. I think it might take them till tomorrow to settle that discussion. And that's really the major issue of the moment. When is the start date for the enclosure of the conclave itself?
And do you suspect this is secretive as well? These meetings that are being held?
I keep telling people this is about as secretive as backroom Chicago politics in the 1930s. So lots of things get decided in this world behind closed doors. Including everything from political nominations to Apple stock options. This is a process that is governed by a body of law that was established in its most recent form by John Paul II, slightly modified by Benedict XVI, in these general congregations of cardinals, which meet daily between the time at which the chair of Peter falls vacant and the enclosure of the conclave. All of the cardinals, including those over 80 years old who will not be participating in the voting for the new pope, are part of the discussion, and that's why these things tend to take a while. And you have well over 150 men, many of them elderly, all of whom think they have something to say that's important. And it might take a while to reach a consensus, for example, on when should they start the actual voting process.
But you think that that may happen as early as tomorrow, George?
Well, some thought it was going to happen today, and it may. I mean, it could. I think that's unlikely, but it'll certainly happen, if not today, then tomorrow or Wednesday morning at the latest. I can't imagine them tarrying much longer than that.
They've already had a morning session. They're planning an afternoon session that begins at 5:30 Rome time, 11:30 Eastern time?
That's correct.
What was the reaction, George, by the public, by church leaders on last Thursday? I mean, give us a sense for what the environment, the climate was like in Rome at that time.
I think it was an environment of enormous affection and respect for Benedict XVI. There was a lot of emotion as people watched that helicopter leave from the Vatican helipad and head off to Castel Gandolfo. There was a sense in some people's minds and hearts that this was perhaps the last time they were going to see this man, whom the Romans in particular had come to esteem highly. So there was a lot of emotion. I think there's also, it's fair to say, a sense of concern. This is a completely unprecedented situation. Previous papal abdications have taken place under quite different circumstances. Nothing like this has ever happened before. And so there's a sense that the church is sailing into uncharted waters with perhaps not a very good sonar system to map the rocks and the shoals it's sailing through.
George Weinkel joining us today is Father Patrick Winslow, pastor of St. Thomas Aquinas Church here in Charlotte, and he has a question for you.
Hi, George. When I spoke with some clergy friends of mine who were around when Benedict was elected, they said that there was an emerging consensus, even before the conclave began, that Benedict was the only one, or at that time Cardinal Ratzinger, the only one who could actually rise to the occasion and follow the great John Paul II. Is there a similar feeling emerging or coalescing around a single candidate?
No, frankly, there isn't. I said on one of the NBC broadcasts yesterday that if this were the Daytona 500, not only would there be no pole position winner, there would be no front row.
Oh, my goodness.
This is considerably more open than 2005. I think your friends told you exactly rightly. What was called then a consensus of esteem quickly built up around Cardinal Ratzinger for two reasons. One, he had done a brilliant job running these general congregations of cardinals, which in those days, in that circumstance, began immediately on the death of John Paul II. And then he had delivered a masterful sermon at John Paul II's funeral. So any questions that there might have been about could he handle the public aspects of this office were resolved then. And so I think people knew going in, if they were paying attention and not paying attention to caricatures and cartoons, that Ratzinger was the odds-on choice to come out as the new pope. There is absolutely nothing like that right now. So my hunch at the moment, we'll see what happens over the next week before the conclave is enclosed, a week or longer until the conclave is enclosed. My hunch at the moment is that this is going to be a considerably longer balloting process than it was the last time, or in 1978. We might even get to the point of some of the conclaves of the early 20th century, which took as long as 5 days.
Also joining us today, George, is Dr. Peter Judge, Interim Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and an Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Winthrop University. He has a question. Dr. George. Judge, excuse me.
Hello, George. You've been a student of ecclesiology, a papal biographer. You've watched the situation closely. As you've mentioned, and so many people have mentioned, this is an unprecedented situation. What do you think? In fact, editorials and a number of Catholic magazines and others have been saying that this situation is not about Benedict, but about the papacy. What do you think the implications are here for ecclesiology?
That's a very good question, to which there is no proper or settled answer, because we don't know how this is going to work out. I mean, we've already seen some things said that suggest to me and to others problems. When, for example, someone commenting on the possibility of the election of the Cardinal Archbishop of Manila, Luis Antonio Tagle, who's 55 years old, and someone said, well, it's not a problem that he's 55. He can do this for 15 years and then retire. That is to reduce the papacy to another CEO-type job. And that is precisely the kind of papacy we've been moving away from for the past 34 years. That seems to me problematic. I think the question of what kind of internal and perhaps even external pressures, the knowledge which was once theoretical but is now existential, that a pope can abdicate. I mean, that's always been possible in theory, but now it's happened. What kind of pressures will that create on the next man and the man after that and the man after that under a variety of circumstances, not just waning physical energies, but other circumstances. I mean, people who disagree with him, people who think he's making a mess of things. This is all unsettling, and while there's a crazy fringe who say that this is, and I mean crazy, who say this is an illegitimate act and the new pope will not be the pope, he'll be an anti-pope, that's all nonsense. But that that this act, taken in conscience and after long prayer, and a real act of self-abasement, of humility on the part of Benedict XVI, nonetheless could have all sorts of unexpected consequences. I think that's a lot on people's minds these days. People are having second, third, and fourth thoughts about all this.
But very quickly, George, so it's not going to be another 600 to 700 years before we see the next resignation of a pope?
I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea. I think it would be utterly premature to say that a precedent has been set here that others will necessarily follow.
Very good.
It would be utterly premature to say that.
George Weigel is author of the book Evangelical Catholicism, Deep Reform of the 21st Century Church, is a distinguished senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., Catholic theologian in Rome right now as an on-air consultant commentator for NBC News. George, thank you so much for this insight. We appreciate you joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Very good. Gentlemen, your reactions to anything that George had to say there, starting with you, Dr. Judge.
Well, I think I was going to pick up on what he was saying there. I think not only does it have implications as far as the papacy is concerned, but I think people are thinking differently about the structure of the church. I don't mean that in a negative way either. It could have positive and negative implications, but it's interesting to hear him speak about some of these issues. I think people may see the papacy as functioning somehow differently in their Catholic lives. I don't know if the other gentlemen think about that as well.
Let me introduce the other gentleman also joining us from Belmont Abbey College, Dr. David Williams, Chair of the Department of Theology, and again, Father Patrick Winslow, pastor at St. Thomas Aquinas Church here in Charlotte. Dr. Williams, you would wish to weigh in?
Yes, let me chime in on what Peter had to say, because I think, as George ended with cautions that we don't know what kind of precedent this will set, I think if you observe the manner that Pope Benedict left office, he did some things towards the end that indicated he was trying to minimize that, not just the fact that he is not going to be retired like an ex-president jetting around the world and that sort of thing, but will be living an essentially contemplative, retired monastic life. And secondly, some details to the ceremonial changes. His last words to the cardinals, he went out of his way to speak about his own reverence and obedience to his successor. And the installation of his successor, he restored a public profession of allegiance by each individual cardinal to the new pope in the public liturgy of installation. That had been taken out, and now it's back.
The process of selecting a new pope has begun in Rome, and our discussion on that will continue on WFAE and Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NFocus magazine, announcing a night of dessert and wine tasting at Sugar Rush 2013, Thursday, 6 to 8:30 p.m., supporting the NC Dance Theater. More at nfocusmagazine.com. And Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting author David Sedaris for one night only, April 22nd in Belk Theater, reading new unpublished stories and hosting a book signing. Tickets now available at blumenthalarts.org. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, the Charlotte City Council recently voted unanimously to give developers a density bonus for affordable housing in affluent parts of the city. A recent study suggests we have a shortfall of more than 15,000 units, and some question whether that's a workable solution. We'll look at how the density bonus might impact housing and exactly what constitutes affordable housing when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, assessing the economic and political damage from the tax and spending impasse, the price to be paid, and who pays it.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include Dr. David Williams, Chairman of the Department of Theology at Belmont Abbey College. Father Patrick Winslow is pastor at St. Thomas Aquinas Church in Charlotte. Dr. Peter Judge is the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Winthrop University. Father Winslow, you wanted to weigh in on something that George Weigel just said from Rome in that live report.
Yes, actually, he commented that it was unprecedented, the move of Pope Benedict XVI, resigning and taking his leave. But it is canonically envisioned. It is envisioned as a possibility for a Roman pontiff to do so. And this is especially in light of the fact that we live in a world of modern medicine and we can see things coming down the line, dementia, Alzheimer's, various things that do affect the way a pope can carry out his responsibilities, not just being mobile or not just being able to make these grand tours, but most importantly, he needs to have his mental faculties. And so we can now see through doctors' reports and various exams that somebody can see coming down the line the loss of mental faculties. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's happened in this case. Mm-hmm. But in light of that, the possibility of stepping aside is very important. And I don't – in my opinion, I don't see this as being a wave of the future. I do see it, however, being exercised when something along those lines is forecasted for the pontiff. Other than that, I would say that the implications are also very positive because people are now beginning to see the papacy as an office rather than a person. And that is incredibly important because in our faith, that's how we regard the papacy. Usually he's the sole pope on earth. But he doesn't exist in isolation. He is part of a larger group. I think he's number 265. Is that right? Mm-hmm. He's the 265th. So he sees himself spiritually connected across time with a whole college of popes, if you will. Now the next one coming in will just have the benefit of having one in his backyard rather than the spiritual veil having to be penetrated for that sort of communion.
And yet I think it's also important. Joseph Ratzinger was a young theologian at the Second Vatican Council, and at that time, when the retirement of priests and the retirement of bishops came to the fore, when that was brought up, he made some part of his advisement at the Second Vatican Council promoted this idea. I think not in an explicit way, but I think the seeds were planted. I think he very wisely not only didn't want to repeat the experience of John Paul II, who was so almost pitiful in his last days, he didn't want to repeat that experience, but I think he also has been thinking about this for a long time, even before he was pope. If not explicitly, I have to think it was in the back of his mind.
It is interesting that you say that, Dr. Judge, because the Second Vatican Council, we're talking about over 50 years ago.
Yes.
So he was thinking about the ability of popes being able to retire.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm not aware that he wrote anything
okay.
or said anything. But as part of that group of theologians who were advising bishops, and we know that something unheard of at the time, a priest retiring and then bishops retiring – I can remember that was something unheard of. Priests don't retire. They just die at the altar or something like that.
Actually, you know? We do retire, but,
but we
hope to
new.
One day.
That's new.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, Dr. Williams, you wanted to add something.
I think one of the things about the retirement, it is something he's clearly been interested in and had been thinking about. He made two pilgrimages to the tomb of the last pope to really resign for non-political reasons, St. Celestine V, and and it's been a while. That was 1294. And it's not something that's unprecedented. Pius XII in World War II had a pre-written resignation letter. He famously said there was talk that the Nazis would kidnap him out of Rome. And he famously said, well, they won't kidnap the Pope. They'll get Eugenio Pacelli, his birth name, because I won't be Pope if they do that. And it's been said that if John Paul II had been mentally incapacitated, that he had left a resignation letter. So I think it's out there. What I think the Holy Father had courage with was to step forward and do this and to begin that process of thinking about it. We've had the witness of faithfulness until the end of bearing that example with John Paul II. Mm-hmm. We needed the countervailing example in a way to free his successors. They'll mm-hmm. be able to choose as they see fit, as God leads them, the way of John Paul II or the way of Benedict.
And he himself has, by doing this, has made the papacy not about himself. It's not a personal privilege. I think that's a tremendous step.
Something else that George said that really stuck with me was he said that the process now is more open. What does he mean by that? Is it because information is, in fact, even twice as fast as it used to be, just as recent as 2005 when we were selecting the last pope?
I think what he meant in terms of it being open was that there wasn't sort of an heir apparent. Mm. I think what he was talking about, not so much the process as he was talking about the field of contenders, if you will. The last go-around, it seemed to be that there was a general feel emerging in Rome that Cardinal Ratzinger was the only one who could follow in the shoes of John Paul. And it was said, I think, immediately thereafter his election, that John Paul created the stage from which Benedict would teach the world. And I think in many ways that came to pass. In this context, it seems to be a very different circumstance. And if I were to hazard a guess, I think what's prominent on the minds of the cardinals has to do with the governing of the universal level of the church more than anything else.
Cardinal Wuerl from Washington had a comment on NPR on their story this morning about the gathering of the cardinals. Just a quick comment about this seems to be wide open this time, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. the field is not, and he made the comment, it may well not be a European for the first time, that the field is much more widely open than ever before.
I think that's something that's a wide consensus, but I think we can still sketch there are qualifications, there are skills that as the cardinals are looking at one another and assessing one another. And I think perhaps the largest these days may be that governance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is a feeling, I think, which one can see in many commentators, that Pope Benedict's concern for teaching, for serving in that way, has, and also very recent things in the Vatican, there have been a sense that the church needs to be better governed. Administratively. And I think the cardinals are looking around at their brother cardinals. Who of us has that skill? Who of us can mm-hmm. ensure that we are governed well and rightly?
So what traditions do you anticipate may fall by the wayside, if any, in the selection of this pope, Father Winslow?
I don't foresee any traditions falling, to be quite honest. I think it'll be interesting to see if the new Holy Father follows with certain smaller decisions of tradition that were made both by John Paul II and by and other ones made by Benedict XVI. But that's really for the sort of the real insider type of questions, you know, what the crest looks like and things of those names. That's nothing terribly important. I think everyone's asking themselves, you know, what are the priorities of the cardinal electors. What are the considerations? And I think that's
consensus. A great question. Yeah. So let's start dissecting that.
And I think
what
it goes to
are the priorities?
This issue, I honestly think it's governance at the universal level of the church. I think that there's going to be an issue of age. since we just had a Holy Father at the age of 86 step aside. I think they're going to want somebody who is a little bit young, obviously a little bit younger than 76 when he was elected, or rather 78 when he was elected.
Yes. Right.
But beyond that, I really do think it comes down to governing. It is not an easy thing to govern over there in the Vatican, in the Holy See.
Is this an unfair question to ask because of the age, and if they selected someone younger, that because of the precedent that has now been set, that a pope can resign, might it enter into the thought process of the cardinals that we can elect someone who is younger, and if he doesn't work out?
I don't see that happening at all.
Okay.
No, because it would be entirely his prerogative. And so you can't envision how a Holy Father will be thinking about his pontificate, 10, 15, 20 years from now.
I think this is one of the things that they're obviously worried about. George himself brought that up. But I think you're right that there's not going to be some kind of deal that if we elect you at 58, like John Paul, that in 20 years you'll step aside. I think there's still going to be that kind of respect for the office and the sense that the church in general does not see. I don't think lay people want that. I don't think the bishops want that.
I even think it would be a negative precedent, actually. I would see more, to the extent that one would feel internal pressure, I'd almost expect the next Holy Father to feel more pressure not to resign if he should be spared to a great age than the other way around. Because anything done once is a precedent. Anything done twice in a row runs the risk of becoming a tradition.
Yeah. The one thing I think we would not want is entrenchment, in a way, that that the person who gets elected would say, by gosh, I'm never going to resign. You know, I'm never going to do that. I don't think we want to go to either extreme with that way. Your question before about traditions falling, it was an excellent guest columnist in the Tablet over the weekend, the well-respected English Catholic periodical, that talked about how John Benedict and John the 23rd actually are alike in setting precedents. And his point was John the 23rd was seen as this great progressive who declared the Second Vatican Council and was always kind of held up as the kind of the patron saint of modern-day Catholic liberals, whereas Benedict XVI is more of a conservative, and people see him as a symbol of conservatism. But in a very real way, they both have set precedents that both hold on to tradition and move us forward in the same way. And his point was, we misunderstand tradition, that in a very real way, I think what's happening now is that the best tradition of the church is going to be preserved and move forward.
What do you mean when you say, Father Winslow, that an emphasis is going to be on the ability of the next pope as far as governance of the church is concerned?
Sure, I can answer that. All of the bishops of the church have a threefold role. Including the Bishop of Rome, which makes him the Roman Pontiff, the Pope, and that is to be, in biblical terms, priest, prophet, and king, or to teach, to govern, and to sanctify. And the teaching and the sanctifying are not really the issues, I think, that are of the concern of the next Pontiff. It really comes down to the governing and the way the Church works. Is that in a global church where we have a billion-plus Catholics and we have structure and a hierarchy throughout the globe, there is a universal layer that is incredibly important for the life of the church because certain things need to be dealt with at that universal or that upper tier. And what can happen is you have a lot of chefs in the kitchen, and the Roman Pontiff is the deciding chef, if you will, in those dicasteries and those offices over in the Holy See. But you can have a great deal of different opinions emerging about different topics that rise to that level of governance. And what can happen is it becomes stalled, inefficient, there can become some debate that prolongs efficiency. So I think that the next Roman pontiff wants to bring a level of efficiency, a level of respect, a level of harmony at that universal level to make it serve the church better.
Dr. David Williams, from the Department of Theology at Belmont Abbey College, you wrote that you think it's probably important to highlight ways that a conclave is not like the elections or politics here in the U.S., that, of course, there are political aspects, but they don't necessarily work the way people here expect. We get things wrong if we look at the process through the lens of American politics.
Well, I think that may be something I'm particularly apt to see because I did graduate work in political theory before I shifted over into theology. But I think as Americans, we see anything that has the word election in it as though it were Congress or even worse, God help us, a presidential election. And conclaves, there is politics, of course, but they don't work that way. You don't have people making dramatic floor speeches. You don't necessarily have the kind of horse trading that we associate with leadership elections mm-hmm. in Congress, say. You have people, cardinal electors, engaging in quiet discussion all over Rome in groups by their languages, those they've worked with in Roman offices, discussing not who's best for me or even who's best for my diocese, but who would be best for the church, who would be best for meeting these needs. And the conclave itself in really sort of formalizing that.
Father Winslow.
Yes, actually, to highlight that, in the conclave, which is where we have that shroud of secrecy and privacy, and it's highly governed, at every ballot that's cast, every cardinal, mm-hmm. as he casts his ballot, has to say the following: I call as my witness Christ the Lord, who will be my judge, that my vote is given to the one before God I think should be elected.
Mm.
That's something a mm-hmm. cardinal of the church doesn't say lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to be said at every ballot that he casts by every cardinal. So this isn't just something announced. This is said when you deposit that little piece of paper.
And if you have not heard yet, the papal conclave date has not been set as to when it's going to begin. George Weigel was of the opinion that it would start possibly as early as tomorrow. The cardinals are meeting again this afternoon, 11:30 Eastern time, 5:30 Rome time, to make that decision about the papal conclave. Dr. Judge, you had something to say?
I think the start of the conclave, interesting points being made, too, in the news. Cardinal George of Chicago, for instance, made a very specific point of wanting there to be plenty of time to sort out issues, for the cardinals to get to know one another. He's very aware, I think, in his comments about the fact that some of the issues of governance need to be addressed and sorted out, whereas those who are in governance, the curia, want the conclave to start quickly. I think it's a rather interesting dynamic.
More of our discussion about the selection of the new pope coming up on Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the College Foundation of North Carolina, offering the North Carolina 529 College Savings Plan, one of many services helping families plan, apply, and pay for college. cfnc.org/nc529. And by Invisible Fence Brand, committed to keeping pets safe at home with customized pet protection solutions, now for any sized property from zero lot lines to large acreage. Details at InvisibleFence.com. Coming up next, in about 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show, dealing with sequestration fallout, assessing the economic and political damage from the tax and spending impasse, the price to be paid, and who pays it. That's the discussion in 20 minutes at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, here on 90.7 WFAE. We'll get back to Charlotte Talks in just a moment. If you'd like to join us, call 704-926-WFAE or 800-603-WFAE.
No spring pledge drive? You could make it happen. Once again, we are encouraging you to pledge early to eliminate days of our 10-day spring membership campaign. Last fall, thanks to you, we were able to reduce the drive by half. Can you imagine eliminating more? It's possible when you go online and contribute at WFAE.org and make your pledge. The clock is ticking, so help us make history by taking even more days off our upcoming fund drive. Thanks for making your pledge today.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include Dr. David Williams from Belmont Abbey College, Father Patrick Winslow from the pastor at St. Thomas Aquinas Church in Charlotte, Dr. Peter Judge, interim dean in the College of Arts and Sciences and associate professor of religious studies at Winthrop University, talking about the selection of the new pope. So let's... George Weigel from Rome was talking about, you know, essentially the horse race, that there is no name out there. How many names do you suspect might be under consideration, Father Winslow?
I would say probably a handful. But as he said, it's anyone's guess at this point. I think that the question you first ask, usually when it comes to the election of a pontiff, is will he be an Italian or non-Italian? That's usually your first question. And that's because it breaks down into the cardinal electors break down to 28 Italians. The next largest voting block is 11, and that's the U.S. The next is Germany with 6, and I think Brazil, Spain, and India all have 5. So you can see that there's a prominence of the Italians being represented in the college electors. So if you have an Italian, I've got some thoughts. If you have a non-Italian, there's some people who have some thoughts and so on.
In the secretive world of the Vatican, there's no way to know who is in the running. Obviously, as we've been talking about, history has yielded plenty of surprises. What are the names that come up time and again, though, in speculation? Ever since February the 11th, when he announced, Pope Benedict announced his resignation, Dr. Williams.
Well, I think if people can sort of see this process developing, you follow John Allen of the National Catholic Reporter along with George, one of the best commentators. But names we see would be Cardinal Scala of Milan, Ouellet, formerly of Montreal, now at work in the Vatican, Cardinal Turkson of Ghana, elsewhere in Europe, perhaps Cardinal Schönborn of Vienna. Latin America, one sees something for Cardinal Scherer from Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, may I interject, according to a 2004 Boston College magazine study, fully 50% of the world's Catholics are Latino.
Mm.
Is that going to have an influence, you think, Father Winslow?
No, I don't think it will necessarily. Again, you're looking at the cardinal electors breaking down to prominently Italian and I would say European. I just don't think, to my mind anyway, that they're going to look at and say how many, you know, what's the largest nationality represented worldwide. With that mindset, you would preclude anybody from say Africa or from the eastern part of the Catholic Church.
Okay, and in the horse race, Dr. Peter Judge, weigh in on the chances of an American pope.
Chances of an American pope. Well, we were talking before we went on the air about how it's interesting that Cardinal O'Malley from Boston, his stock has kind of risen a bit. And, of course, people are tossing around the name of Cardinal Dolan. I think there's been a kind of fear of electing an American. Maybe fear isn't the right word, but the Americans are too aligned with the superpower, too aligned with a military and economic power in the world. I think too many of the other cardinals are fearful of a kind of American hegemony. Maybe we'll see if there's a qualified American who rises, who looks like a good governor, one who can really kind of fit what's needed. That's possible. I don't think it's going to happen this time, and I'm not sure I would want to say when.
Father Winslow, contemplate this question while I make the advertisement for people to join our discussion. The question being, is there an objective among American Catholics that is different from Catholics worldwide in who the next pope should be. And let me invite our listeners to join our conversation at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323 or 1-800-603-9323 online at WFAE.org. Father Winslow, you're on.
I would say that one could not overstate the effect of the pontificate of John Paul II. So I see what I sense in talking with the Catholics here in the United States is that they would love to see someone like that again. They would love to see that type of charisma, that type of ability to be able to connect with the people world over, and all the while standing as a firm witness to the faith that these Catholics here in America believe and trust and surrender themselves to. So I would say that that's probably the first thing on their mind. The last thing on the average American Catholic mind is the issues of governance. Mm. But I can tell you that's probably the first one on the Cardinals' minds.
Mm-hmm. The Italian newspapers, you talked about the possibility of the Italian candidates for the next papacy. The Italian newspapers have been covering in-depth controversy after controversy as it relates to the Catholic Church. Did that, first off, play a role in Pope Benedict's departure, Dr. Williams?
I wouldn't say it played a role in his departure at all. When you're the Holy Father, you have bigger things to think about, and it's clearly something that's been part of his prayer for longer. What it does contribute to is this desire on the part of the cardinal electors that I think it's plain they have to have someone in office who will be good at governance, who will have that experience of keeping a firm hand on the tiller or a firm control of the chefs, as Father Winslow was saying, so that things like that are less likely to happen.
Dr. Judge?
I'd add to that, too, that I think, on the one hand, Benedict was strong enough a personality and a good enough thinker that he wouldn't give in to the kind of the pressure that comes from the press. On the other hand, I think, and the comments have been made about this since February 11th, that the church needs to come into the 21st century, some would even joke the 20th century, with regard to communication and using communication well and being able to, if you want to use the word, counter the criticisms that surface in the press, to be able to use media and social media well. I think another issue that comes into play here too is that rather than allowing the press to write the agenda, we need in some ways to open up the possibilities for theologians, for good ecclesiologists, so to speak, to comment on the church. We've been talking about control and governance, and I wouldn't want people to equate that with quashing dissent. I think one of the things we need to have for a healthy church is a healthy intellectual conversation that isn't just about theologians running wild or being bad, but people who really engage in a conversation about what we are and who we are as a church. And I think the next pope, that's what I would hope for, someone who can allow discussion. I think that was one of the great things about Pope Paul VI, is that he had his own opinions. He had a number of leanings, both conservative and otherwise, but he allowed for discussion. I remember saying that when he died, that one of the things I admired about him was this ability to be like a father who let the family kind of squabble a bit.
Father Winslow.
Yes. Touching back to the original question about the influence of the concerns of Italians, you know, they were caught up in the story regarding the butler who had stolen some private correspondences of the Holy Father.
The document scandal from last year.
Right, and passed them on to the media. And, the Italians love a good drama, and they were following along with it, and they were very much intrigued by it. But if there was an issue that hit their minds was, how does the church work on a universal level? And that's where you get into that issue of governance. And suddenly you can see that there was a context sort of emerging, a dramatic type of context about that question. And now here you have our Holy Father stepping aside, I don't think has anything to do whatsoever with that context, only insofar as it's important for every pontiff to make sure that the Holy See is functioning well. And I think it just brings to the fore, to the minds of the cardinals, especially in the context of Italy, they had been watching all of these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it goes to show you that it is a matter that everybody wants to see addressed. It isn't just some boring topic with respect to the cardinals.
But in exposing and being as vivacious as they have been, are the Italians disqualifying themselves?
The Italian cardinals?
Yes.
No, I don't think so. In fact, I see somebody who's kind of emerging as well among the Italian cardinals, and that's Cardinal Bagnasco from Genoa. And he's the sort who I think at this point doesn't have an enormous amount of fanfare among the cardinals themselves, because I think he's considered sort of a non-threatening-like figure. But in the culture of Italy, my understanding is he was the only Italian cardinal of the 28 electors who spoke up relative to the issues of the past president and the scandals that were emerging there. He has been on the forefront of the Italian culture, the discussions that are hot topics, and he has done so with a certain amount of dignity and intellect.
There are a couple of Italian cardinals who are really pastoral men, mm-hmm. I think, who may not get the flash and the splash, but who could really rise to the fore.
And wearing my political science hat, if I must, it's often possible for men like Cardinal Bagnasco or those other Italian cardinals to emerge in a conclave, because there's an absolute requirement of a two-thirds majority. Mm-hmm. It will often happen that you will have votes going in. It will become apparent that you might not be getting to a two-thirds majority, and someone will come up from the back.
A lot of tradition, let's put it this way. Again, the last time a pope resigned was over 600, 700 years ago. The fact of the matter is the next pope can be any male of a certain age who has been baptized.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes.
It does
yes.
not necessarily have to come from the College of Cardinals.
Or the clergy.
Right. It'd be you, Chris.
Right.
Although
I don't think so, but let's – before we get too far away from this, one other quote from George Weigel that he believes Pope Benedict was, quote, ill-served by some of those around him. Your thoughts, Father Winslow.
Well, I think that's part of the discussion that's been taking place in Rome over the past year relative to this butler and all of those questions that sort of emerged. Who's to say? I think it comes down to the conscience of each cardinal. But you got to remember that these cardinals, who are also bishops, before they come and serve into the Holy See, they're used to being the last word on many issues. And when they come into Rome and they start to work and be a part of an organism where they are not the last word, it's a very difficult sort of thing. It's like having many chefs in the same kitchen, with one chef being the Roman pontiff. So to bring them together and to work in concord is a difficult matter. And it's not a small thing that the last words that he said to these cardinals, that is Benedict XVI, was that you must work together.
A symphony.
Like a symphony.
Right.
You must work together like a symphony. Even you come from different points of view, so you're all different notes. But coming from a common faith, these notes should be in harmony, not dissonance.
Is that going to make the process that much harder, that much longer, you think, Dr. Williams?
It could easily. I mean, as George said, the conclave may go longer because there is no apparent consensus going in. At the same time, and especially since the majority of the electors, I think, are residential archbishops, mm-hmm. Holy Week is coming up. No bishop wants to be absent from their people for Holy Week, for Easter. So my guess would be we will be saying Habemus Papam, we have a pope, by March 19th or so.
Not by this weekend, but by March 19th.
No.
Which would be a very significant date, actually, the Feast of St. Joseph.
Yes,
absolutely. And in terms of procedure, right now the way the law reads is they have to begin the conclave 15 days after the vacancy, but no later than 20. But Benedict changed the rules a little bit to allow the cardinals to come to a consensus in order to begin a few days early in light of certain circumstances, his being one. So one of the first things that's being addressed today as they meet in their general congregation of cardinals is not only the date, but the other thing they're doing is they're tearing through the Constitution that deals with this interregnum between the reigns of two pontiffs. And that's University Domenici Gregis. And this document specifies quite literally everything that happens between the pontiffs.
And just as a practical matter, once the papal conclave begins, it's continuous until they select the pope.
It is continuous, and it has a certain number of mechanisms that forces it to come to a resolution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In our last 30 seconds here, your thoughts on who might be the next pope, Dr. Williams.
Happily, a decision decided far, far above my pay grade. But I would hope someone who, while having governance experience, is capable of continuing the teaching and the kind of engagement with the modern world, its thought of the modern world that Pope Benedict showed.
Dr. David Williams is from the Department of Theology at Belmont Abbey College. Father Patrick Winslow is pastor, St. Thomas Aquinas Church in Charlotte. And Dr. Peter Judge is an associate professor of religious studies at Winthrop University. Gentlemen, thank you so much for this discussion.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.